So what does human touch and chronic pain actually have in common? Well, it turns out there is a whole lot more involved than you may think. We know that human touch is an integral part of our emotional and physical well-being. We also know that our emotional well-being and physical well-being are very much a part of the chronic pain lived experience. So where do they come together and where do they overlap? Well, that lies within our nervous system and all that we know about the science of pain, the science of touch, and how our nervous system works. Hello and welcome to the Chronic Pain Experience podcast. I am your host and coach, Dina Chopoulos. In today's episode, I'm going to be inviting on Kat Anna. Kat is a holistic healer, Reiki master, spiritual coach, and expert on touch starvation. She is passionate about exploring the often overlooked link between touch and our nervous system and our overall health. With an integrated approach, love, and compassion, she guides her clients to unlock their healing potential and find harmony within. Thank you so much for being here today, Kat, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dana. Thank you so much for having me today.
In the intro, I mentioned a little bit about how we're going to be diving into the topic of touch starvation. We're going to try and do it from sort of a biological, a psychological, and a social aspect, because that's how we tend to look at the whole pain experience. So first of all, Kat, for our listeners who may not have heard the term, what is touch starvation?
Deanna, touch starvation is when a person experiences very little or almost no contact with another human, or when a person goes from having a certain amount of touch to all of a sudden having none or very little. In the case of a divorce, of a death of a spouse, being isolated, like even COVID-19.
Yes.
So isolation creates touch starvation as well.
And if I can also add, the pain part, that there are conditions that will also sadly mean that touch starvation is a result of the lived experience with pain as well. So there's lots to talk about. What might, so from your experience and from the people that you see, what might touch starvation look and feel like?
So the physical symptoms are increased stress, sleep problems. In men, it actually causes aggression, anxiety, fatigue, loneliness, fear of attachment. So it's almost like the deeper you are into the touch starvation, the more lonely you feel, and you can sometimes even push away and isolate yourself from others. As far as mentally, just the depression, the anxiety, fear around being people, fear of intimacy, feeling unworthy of love, feeling not lovable, not wanted, not desired. So these are all,
And this is why we are connecting today, because there's such a huge overlap between those who live with pain and those who don't, who experience touch starvation. So I'm really excited to get into this. Some of the biological reasons that might lead to touch starvation are situations like an allodynia, when pain is amplified just from something as simple as touch. So we know that pain impacts all of our internal systems, but how does touch starvation affect our immune system, Kat?
Well, touch starvation affects our immune system by suppressing our immune system. It actually affects our white cells in particular, and our ability to produce antibodies is also decreased. In another sense, because it raises our cortisol, cortisol is also an immune suppressant. And short-term cortisol exposure will fight inflammation, but long-term cortisol exposure will increase inflammation.
Right.
So it affects it in many ways.
And that inflammation is also a part of the whole chronic pain biological experience. So I'm glad you touched on that. So before I ask you the next question, I just, again, want to just give a little bit of context to our listeners. Mm-hmm. It's important for them to know that the nervous system is really at the center of pain and the lived experience with it. So it's often one of the things that's not talked about when you go and see your doctor. So far, there's a couple things that we know. So first of all, we know chronic pain is a highly complex process. We know that chronic pain causes a real sensitization, we call it, where things that were once deemed to be safe are now interpreted as danger. And finally, we also know that chronic pain creates this really dysregulated nervous system, which means it's very difficult for us to move out of that fight or flight or freeze response. And this all is also impacted by touch. So Kat, in your experience, how does this real lack of touch impact our nervous systems?
Oh, it puts us into flight or fight by raising our stress level. And then once we're in it, the cortisol raises, and then you have the side effects of the touch deprivation on top of the side effects of high cortisol, which affects virtually every organ in our body and every function in our body.
Right.
And our skin, being our largest organ, directly communicates to our brain about our external environment.
Right.
So on every given inch of skin, we have thousands of receptors that tell our brain about the temperature, about pressure, and about pain. And those are the receptors that we have
right.
in our skin. So they're constantly communicating to our brain whether we are safe. And if all we're feeling is the pain and we're not feeling the love and the loving touch to combat that, then that's putting us into flight or fight permanently.
Right.
Like you said, it's hard to come out of that.
And then you spend enough time in that, then you eventually fold into the whole freeze response, right? Which becomes even
Yes.
harder to come out of. So, and interestingly enough, I find that touch is one of the important, impactful ways to be able to move you out of that freeze response. And so, you know, tying in your nervous system as part of your strategy is really, really important. So there's a lot of things we talked about earlier too, and we're just going to touch on it first. I'm kind of deviating from my questions here, but you mentioned the word fear, and I'm really glad you did, because when it comes to pain anyway and touch, sometimes there is that sense of fear around pain being amplified because of touch. Can you think of other examples? Like, what other ways would we experience fear when it comes to touch starvation?
Sometimes pain can be a factor that gives us fear of being touched,
right.
But there's also the trauma and the reason
right.
for us isolating ourselves. You know, there's a lot of people that are sexually or physically abused, then self-isolate and withdraw from making connections with people. And so they are further traumatized by not allowing themselves to have a positive experience of touch.
Right.
So then once you attempt to experience touch, you're right back in that situation. And it takes so much time and so much effort and patience to get out of that, but it's not impossible.
Right.
And the other thing that happens is when you have been without touch for so long, and intimacy and a connection with a human, because those two go hand in hand, because you can't experience the touch without the connection with another human. So depending on if it was, you know, if your heart was broken, depending on your feeling about your last relationship, the longer that you experience touch starvation, the more you are likely to even have PTSD from being touch starved in itself. So I've had clients that have not been in relationships for decades, for a very long time. And I had one client in particular that was experiencing full-on panic attacks when he was being held. And it took us a long time of holding, stopping, holding, stopping, constantly communicating to rewire his brain and his perception of touch and his experience of love and touch and the safety of it. But I mean, I've seen amazing results, and it's completely possible.
They're amazing. Honestly, there's so much to unpack just there, because I love that you, first of all, you know what you're talking about. You really know your stuff. So kudos to you. The second thing is, I think you brought up just around two words that I think are really key for us to explore, that avoidance, which is, you know, one of those things where when you, either with pain, you avoid the touch, or if you are touched starved, then there may be avoidance in other ways as well. Can you maybe give me some examples? And I think you mentioned them earlier, but what sort of avoidance behaviors might happen as a result of this deprivation?
Well, just withdrawing from people, from connections, from intimacy altogether. I also like to mention that touch deprivation can happen actually while you are in a relationship and while you are being sexually active.
Right.
Because we often, and especially men, link touch to sexual intimacy, and they are not the same. So you don't even have to be an intimate romantic relationship to experience positive and loving touch. But on the same note, even if you are in one, it doesn't mean that you are experiencing loving, safe touch.
Right. Oh, good distinction to make. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
That's important.
Yeah. So I think it all just really depends on why a person is touch starved and what the situation is. Sometimes it's a situation. Sometimes it's isolation, working from home, you know, lockdowns, not being able to date, not being able to see family members. Sometimes it's past trauma. Sometimes it's, you know, the anxiety and the depression from touch starvation, which was very short term, but now we've kind of sunk into a hole and we don't know how to come out of it.
Right. So I know you did touch on kind of what the way out is a moment ago, which is, my guess is, just like we work in pain reprocessing, is this gentle, gradual exposure to help them. And like you did with your client that you mentioned earlier about how, you know, it would start with just a touch and communication around how you're feeling and breath work and all that stuff. So this gentle, graduated exposure, I'm assuming, is the work that you do to help people move through that real lack of touch?
Yes,
yeah,
it is. And I have two different treatments that I usually actually use together, and that is massage and cuddle therapy. So the massage uses three different types of touch, because when you get a regular massage, like a relaxing massage or a deep tissue, the pressure, your body eventually gets numb to the pressure, and our skin likes to be touched very lightly to actually wake up those skin receptors that tell us that we're being touched in a very loving way and makes us feel safe. So there is a particular kind of wrong way and a right way to touch someone, because the right touch can make you feel safe and love, and the wrong touch can put you into flight or fight. So it's really about the intention with which you are being touched, whether it's by yourself or someone else, the pressure and the speed. Our body likes to be touched at 3 centimeters per second,
wow,
which is very slow,
yeah.
Right? So that is one of the ways that I treat touch starvation, is through the massage. And then I also do cuddle therapy, which starts with, you know, holding hands, and it's constant communication. And then it's one armed embrace, and then it's two, and then it's laying down, and it's a constant conversation with, check in with your body. How does it feel? Do you feel safe? How is your breathing? Can I put my arm here? Can I hold you? You know, so it's just, it's a constant conversation, constant checking in. I think one of the gifts is for that person to learn how to connect to their body.
Right. Ah, what a gift. And I love
and
how it takes such a gradual approach to it to really create that sense of safety for them through words, through actions, through the environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. We are going to dive more into the safety because I think it's a really important part, especially because we're talking about the nervous system. But with the touch therapy comes with it the whole concept of connectedness. And so with the work that you're doing, how is this feeling of connectedness really an important part of the work that you're doing?
Well, humans are built to have connections. We are built for connections. We are not meant to live alone. We are not meant to be isolated, to work alone, to not live with our parents or family nearby. And you can notice the difference in mental health issues and in touch starvation in different parts of the world. There are certain communities that are not experiencing these problems. They're also not experiencing the same health issues as we are, I would say, in North America specifically. It's important for us to be connected to ourselves first and foremost, to be connected to our body, to know how we're feeling. A lot of people don't know. They're not connected to their body. They don't know when they feel safe. They don't know when they feel on edge. And when, you know, flight or fight becomes a baseline for you, you become disconnected to a stress response because you can no longer detect a stress response in your body. Right? You kind of become immune to it. And connection to others, connecting to nature, connecting to animals, connecting to other people that are friends or romantic partners and family members. I mean, like, we all want to be connected, to be seen, to be loved, to be heard. And, you know, how do we know who we are without the reflections of others? I mean, if we were on this earth alone, we would have no idea who we are as humans.
Mm-hmm.
We would know nothing about ourselves. So it's those connections and those reflections in others that help us become who we are. And
Absolutely.
All those experiences.
Oh, wow.
It's really why we're here.
Yeah, it's
is
true.
to connect to others.
Yeah. And so much of that experience comes from our nervous system, right? Whether it be that evolutionary process of keeping us alive, you know, survival, to connecting with others. And I think we really, and I'm sure you're seeing this as well, are on such a path, a trajectory in a good way, and we're trying to find ways to reconnect. And I do find even through this interweb of ours, the worldwide web, we are still finding ways to connect. It may not be the exact same as be able to be face to face because obviously we're missing the touch component. But I do believe there are ways we can find to be able to connect and look at each other through a camera. However, when we're talking about touch therapy, that's not going to help us at all. But let's kind of just hang out in the whole idea of safety for now. So I think for those who live with pain or those who live with touch starvation may not have a full appreciation about how important safety really is to our nervous system. In your professional opinion, how important is safety in the lived experience of your clients?
Well, safety is everything. Safety is the difference between being in your sympathetic nervous system and your parasympathetic nervous system. Feeling safe allows us to connect to other humans. It puts us out of fight or fight. And just feeling safe in our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'll say it again. Most people don't realize that they don't feel safe. And when I say safety, I just want to clarify, this is physical safety and emotional safety.
Exactly. Yep.
Right. And so when you are in an environment that's high stress where people are screaming, you don't feel safe. If you're in an environment where someone is often emotionally dysregulated, you don't feel safe. If you're a child in a home that's unpredictable, you don't feel safe. And again, that becomes your baseline. So you don't truly know what safety is. And one of the first things, because I do a lot of other healing stuff and I'm a Reiki master, in my healing center, one of the main things that I usually focus on at the beginning of, you know, like when someone new comes in and they're trying to get treatment for a condition or for something.
Yes.
One of the first thing is I do is I create safety in your body because I need them to know what it feels like. And I need them to create a new baseline.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Yep.
So I create that safety with somatic movement, with Reiki, with meditation, because I need them to have a goal. I need them to have a place to look forward to. Without experiencing it, they don't really know what it feels like.
Oh, I don't know if you can see, and anyone tuning in for the podcast can't see the huge grin on my face. You are touching on all the major points. It is so, so true. When it comes to the lived experience with chronic pain, safety is number one in importance, just like it is for the treatments that you do. We also need to have a felt sense of safety. We have to sort of work to understand how does that safety feel. And we also have to start with that, because if we are trying to do the work, whatever that work might look like, even if it's physiotherapy or medications or procedures, if we don't have that sense of safety and our nervous system is locked in that fight or flight or freeze response, we're not going to get the outcomes, right, that we're hoping for. So it is so big. And that's part of the reason why we're having this conversation today. So now safety also, you touched on it, is, you know, you creating that safe space between your client and yourself, whether it be the environment you're in, the words you're using, the amount of touch time that you're doing, the speed of touch. Are there other ways that you're creating safety for someone that you're seeing?
Energetically.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, and this is hard to portray, but I work very hard at keeping my energy very calm. I'm in my feminine, and you know, a lot of people will just come and open up and are crying within 3 minutes, and they're like, I don't know why this is coming up. And it's just, it's me being who I am, like showing my compassion, being open, and making them feel like they can be their true self, like they can say anything without judgments.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times, like, I actually share a lot about myself, because when I'm building connections with my clients, you can't trust anyone or open up to them if you're always the one talking and you don't really know anything about this person. So I'm very open about my journey to hear and all the things that I've gone through, which I've learned on my own skin and in my own body, how to move past certain things and how to heal certain certain diseases. So when I talk about things, it's not things I've read, it's things I've actually done. And I feel that my clients can sense that authenticity and my compassion. So it's energy, it's creating a safe space, it's being non-judgmental, it's asking permission to touch them. Like, every time I touch them, I ask their permission.
Yeah, amazing.
Right?
Yeah. And every interaction you have, you know, you're allowing that nervous system of yours and theirs to be able to kind of co-regulate, right? To kind of work together.
Sorry. And can I add just two more things that
yes.
People always comment on? And then when I explain it to them, they're like, wow, I play the same five songs on repeat for every healing session, and I burn the same incense. And that is because I know that your sense of smell has the longest memory out of all the senses. And I know that I am rebuilding their nervous system. I am rewiring their nervous system. So when they experience a peaceful environment and they are at rest and they are relaxed in this environment and they feel safe, the next time they come in, by hearing the same music and by smelling the same smell, I'm literally rewiring their brain to have this experience as a safe experience every single time.
Right.
And a lot of them will actually download the music and play it at night when they're sleep, when they can't sleep, when they're stressed, because it literally reminds their brain of being here, receiving a healing and being calm and being at peace. So these are all the tools that we have that I like to use in my healing center to just create new memories for them and rewire their brain and create safety.
Oh, amazing. Was there a second one you wanted to mention, or did that cover it?
So it was this, it was the smell and the music.
Okay, perfect.
It's the same thing.
I love it, because you, it's all the things that we don't necessarily, you know, people wouldn't understand you were doing. Like, if, you know, if someone came to you, they felt safe, they felt like this feels right, but they wouldn't know the science behind why you're introducing the same music and the same smells. Like, it's, and it, but it's powerful, isn't it? And it's the exact same work we need to do for chronic pain, is that reprocessing, that coming from a place of feeling like everything is dangerous to a place of gradual micro doses of safety. Of familiarity with the smells, with the sounds, and you're really pulling upon the five senses, which I think is also very powerful too. Oh,
that's what I'm trying to do. And you know, overcoming frustration and coping with pain, I had to cope myself with a lot of pain as well. So I use all these tools as well, and I will listen to the same five songs. But this is something that you can do for yourself. You don't need someone else.
Right.
Because we have opportunities every day to touch our skin.
Yep.
We all breathe. We all shower. Most people apply some sort of lotion. I would say women more likely than men.
Yeah.
But we have opportunities to touch our skin. So when you become aware of it, you know, do you go in the shower and you scrub and you just mindlessly touch your body, right? And it's rushed and it's hard and it doesn't feel good. Or now, can you be mindful and can you pay attention to the way you touch yourself in everyday life?
Yeah.
You know, do you like certain comforting fabrics that just make you feel warm and cozy because they're soft on your skin? Well, that's what you wear. And if it's not fashionable, then who cares? Because it makes you feel safe in your skin.
Right. And that's every opportunity, like you said, create that sense. Whether you understand why it's happening or not doesn't matter. You just know it feels right.
Yes, and you just have to pay attention to it.
You do. Right. You're tuning in to know that's what feels right. Oh, that's amazing. And I just wanted to reiterate as well, because I know I think I may have talked over you the last time, but that the skin is our largest organ, and it's an important, that's why touch is so impactful, right? Because it is the largest organ that we're tapping into. Yeah. So,
and I feel like we don't pay attention to it enough. This is why I'm
no,
doing what I'm doing.
you're right. You're right. Oh, amazing. So I know that when it comes to whether you live with pain or not, and if you are living with touch starvation, I would imagine the whole communication piece can be a little tricky. So, you know, if you are in a relationship where you are feeling a sense of deprivation in touch or starvation in touch, how would you recommend approaching the conversation with a loved one?
This is a very difficult question. And I will also be honest and tell you that every client I have had thus far for touch starvation has been male.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
And I feel like because it's more socially acceptable for women to hug other women, you know, be the caretakers of children and hug children and hug loved ones more. And like, it's just more socially acceptable for women to experience hugging and touch and kind of that, that platonic touch with non-romantic partners, that I feel like that is the reason that they don't often feel touch starvation as much as the males, because it's not okay for them to experience touch with other males.
Right.
Right. It's not okay. And, you know, they don't want to be accused of crossing a line, right? Because we often think that when a man is wanting to touch us, that it's going to lead to sexual intimacy. And there's that judgment that they have to deal with. So first and foremost, I feel that men do suffer from touch starvation more often than women. So I did suffer from touch starvation because my love language is touch and my partner's needs for touch were way less than mine. And it took like a year to figure this out because of, you know, the honeymoon phase,
Yes.
which is great.
Yes.
Right. So I think it's, you know, it's feeling, first of all, it's connecting to the feeling of I need touch, I need love, not I need sex.
Right.
I need, and approaching it from that. I think a lot of men come here not knowing what it is that they're missing. And a lot of people will actually, you know, seek out relationships because they think that it's the sexual intimacy that they're craving. But then after it's done, it's like they don't feel better. So they just, they're saying like, what is going on? But if you're in a relationship, I think, you know, connecting to that part of you that says, I'm in a loving relationship. I love my partner. We have sexual intimacy or we don't. But either way, I am lacking just this platonic, loving, safe touch. And can I approach my partner and ask for my needs to be met? Do we have that open communication? Or is the reason that I'm experiencing touch starvation because me and my partner are experiencing conflict? And one of the first things that happens is we withdraw physical affection during conflict. So then if we can talk about the conflict, we can't really talk about the fact that we are touch starved.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Right. So having open communication in any relationship, whether it's short term or long term, is key to overcoming touch starvation or any other conflicts that are causing the disconnect, because it's ultimately a disconnect, right? But if you are happy in the relationship, but let's say your partner's physical needs for touch are way less than yours, so they're happy with like two hugs a day, but you really want like the full eight or the full 12, right? You just have to ask for your needs to be met, because we can't expect people to know without telling them and be mind readers, because they are perfectly happy with two hugs a day and, you know, four kisses, but you really want, you know, 12 hugs and a 10-minute cuddle every night.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's what would make you happy. So you just have to feel safe enough to approach your partner and ask for that.
Right. I think that clarity is important. And even whether it be between, you know, a partner, even between parents and kids, I have three kids who are, you know, in the 20s and late teens. And I've really learned how important it is to be able to ask them and for them to be able to articulate how much they need. Because, you know, you get one parent who's a real hugger and one child who's not comfortable with that, it can really create a lot of friction. And so, you know, regardless of who you're talking to, I think the key here is that open, honest communication around stating what it is your needs are, but also understanding what your partner's needs are too.
Yeah, and being sometimes you got to meet in the middle.
Exactly, which is a good space to be. I do know within the chronic pain world, just to pull it back into the pain story, is that oftentimes those conversations are not had simply because our community gets really used to not articulating sort of the lived experience, what they're going through. Everything's fine. I don't want to get into it because they're not going to understand anyway. And so I think part of that conversation is around touch, not even just deprivation, but also how much is too much? And so when it comes to pain, if you are in pain, I think there's a huge leap in the conversation, again, assuming that it's going to be sexual. Well, I can't have sex. It causes too much pain. Well, let's scale it back a little bit. What touch can you handle? And how much, like, can we just do a minute of touch of your husband stroking your arm or your partner stroking your arm? You know, it's really, again, getting back to that graded exposure, just like you do for your clients as well.
Yeah. And what part of your body is more sensitive? Because there's different parts of the body that experience touch differently that will send a shiver and other parts will not send a shiver,
Oh, good point.
right? It's the way the nerves are. So like on the side of our body, if you gently caress the side of your body, there's a nerve on the side that you get instant shivers, right? So it's maybe having a conversation with your partner and then setting time to literally map out your body, your physical body, and where the pain is, and what feels good and what doesn't.
Oh, I love it. It's just that building awareness, understanding. And it's the mindfulness piece too, because you're building awareness as to where you feel more comfortable being touched and how you respond to that touch, but also that mindfulness around where it is that you may not be feeling pain or where you may have an area of less reactivity to touch. Great point. Thank you for bringing that up. Can we just talk a little bit about, and I know we have scratched the surface, but when it comes to some of the psychological, so when I'm thinking specifically about thoughts and emotions tied into deprivation or touch starvation, what sort of emotions are you feeling like your clients are working through alongside the touch therapy?
There's something wrong with me. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy of love. I'm not worthy of like asking someone for love. No one likes me. No one wants me. I'm not desirable. I'm not attractive. Like body image issues, which I was also experiencing myself. So it just makes you really feel bad about yourself. And it makes you feel like there is something wrong with you, that you're experiencing this touch starvation.
I will also add to the whole shame piece. I mean, those who live with chronic
Yeah.
pain deal with shame on a regular basis, and which ties into what you're saying when you feel like you're not able to meet halfway because of whatever reason, whether it be trauma, whether it be the pain, whether it be, and I also find too, if it's been a long time since you've had touch with your partner, it just becomes easier and easier to not
It
touch,
does.
right? And that's those neural pathways that we were talking about. So graded exposure, step by step, is the way to go. What I should ask you, Kat, before I move on, when it comes to those deep emotions that inevitably we'll feel when it comes to either not having enough touch or not being able to give enough touch, what sort of things do you find helpful for your clients to deal with those emotions tied in to the touch therapy?
It's having those conversations,
Good.
and there's a client that I was actually here yesterday who is 63 and has never been in a relationship.
Wow, really?
Yes.
Oh.
And so we do cuddle therapy, and he came to see me a few times more closely together, but now he just comes to maintain. And he told me how life-changing this has been for him for the last year. And he told me how much more accepting he is of himself and how much more comfortable he is in his own skin. And he's now seeking out opportunities to connect with others, right? Which just makes me so happy. But actually, what we do is he likes to dance and he likes to sing. So every time he's here, we record a video of us dancing to one song and singing to one song that he gets to watch when he feels lonely or he feels depressed or he feels disconnected from others, and it makes him laugh. And I'm just with him in that space, letting him be himself without judgment and just totally loving him and being there for him and just witnessing him be himself and saying like, I love you just the way you are. You don't have to be anyone else.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes a touch or you holding someone or me holding someone can convey the message of, I love you. I accept you just the way you are. Sometimes, you know, I have a lot of like that feminine motherly energy. I'm a mama to like everyone. And I think my clients feel that too. And sometimes, you know, you can just feel that nurturing embrace and that safety. And sometimes you don't have to say anything because this is why touch, you know, is a form of communication, because a touch can say things that no words can say. It can say, I'm here for you. I accept you. I understand you. It's okay that you're feeling this way. Like, it's okay. And like, I see you, I hear you, and I'm here with you in this space. And I'm just like holding you and giving you love.
Can you imagine if we lived in a world where our medical model included some of this nurturing? Not to say nurses and doctors are not nurturing. They are. I know they get into the field of it, but they just don't have the time, you know, to be able to have those conversations, to be able to, or no conversations, just to be able to hold a hand, which I know they do use as techniques as well, but it would be such a powerful thing to see complementing our medical system.
This is why mamas cure boo-boos, right? Because we touch it and we kiss it.
Yeah.
And like we hold their face and we say, are you okay, honey? Mm-hmm. And that's all they need.
Right.
And they forget about the pain. It's gone.
Right. Yeah. And you can see why for our listeners, I know you know this, but for our listeners, you know, if you had a tough upbringing, if you had a childhood where you didn't have that connection, whether it be emotionally, physically, spiritually, whatever the connection, how it can impact you down the road, how you may feel like that gentleman who's never been in a relationship. It has its ripple effects. And, just a simple touch to be able to start to rewind that. It's really powerful. Yeah. Kat, is there anything that we did not touch on that you think is really important for our listeners to know before we move on?
No, I think we touched on everything. And if I can just say one thing, it would be that I believe everyone has a power within themselves to heal. And I feel that if you sit with your body and you love your body long enough and you can make your own body feel safe, you can make your own body feel loved. And yes, we all need connection, but connection starts with yourself. So I'm a great believer in really connecting to yourself first and giving to yourself before you give to others. And I know that a lot of people with, well, 80% of people with autoimmune diseases that have chronic pain are women, because we absorb energy and we hold everyone's energy and their emotions, and we are often their caretakers for others. So even when we are in pain, I bet you we still ignore those messages and those signals from our body, and we push ourselves and do things that we probably shouldn't do in order to take care of everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say is, connect to your body, listen to your body, and start to honor yourself and start to listen to those signals where, you know, your body says enough.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that will create the safety, and your body will start to literally, as if it's its own entity, to trust you. Mm-hmm. And you'll start to feel safe within your body.
Absolutely. It's almost like you're befriending your nervous system, befriending
yes,
who you are, right? And getting to know
yes,
you on a deeper level. And when you do, it's such a powerful unfolding of so many other things. Yeah.
Truly magical.
Truly magical. Well, Kat, I think this is probably the best way to end off, because it's always lovely to end off with a little bit of hope, right? And again, like you said, I just want to reiterate, a lot of these things we talked about are things that are already within you. We just
yes,
need to be able to guide them out. And so the tools are there. How can someone connect with you if they're looking to learn more about what you do or to work with you?
Yep, I have a website, iamlovehealingcenter.ca. I am also on Facebook as Kat Anna, and I have a TikTok account and Instagram. It's called Heal With Touch.
Oh.
Heal dot with dot touch dot.
Okay. Okay. Dot, dot, dot. No, I'm just kidding. It's funny because, you know, just tuning in to what my nervous system is doing right now, I have this really deep need to reach out and give you a big hug because this has been a powerful conversation. So for your time, for your expertise, I want to say a very big thank you. And for our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in and listening to our conversation today. I hope, if anything, there is a big takeaway about how impactful safety is for your nervous system. As a matter of fact, it is so important that it is where both Kat and I recommend you start doing the work from. And we just happen to have a program that we are launching and will be running throughout the year periodically where we do just that. We address your nervous system and we teach you how to safely and confidently move through the different autonomic states, such as the fight, the flight, the freeze, and most importantly, the safety and connection. So if you'd like more information, just go to our website at paintopossibilities.com. That's paintopossibilities.com. Or you can find the link for more information inside the show notes of our podcast. It is an important place to start. Thanks again so much for being a part of our experience here, and we'll talk to you soon.